Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popak. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people from all walks of life to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. My guest this week is Melissa Bernstein, the co-founder of the uber-successful toy company Melissa & Doug, which she started with her husband in 1988. The company's created nearly 10,000 toys and sells almost 100 million toys a year. We'll talk about the imagination and creativity behind her designs. Plus, Melissa's written a book called Lifelines, which depicts her personal journey to overcome depression and anxiety and experience true joy. She'll share her story next.
This is Common Denominator, straight up conversations with Moshe Popak. Now, here's Moshe.
Melissa, thank you so much for joining Common Denominator and welcome to the show.
I am so glad to be here, Moshe.
So take us back to the beginning of the inspiration of Melissa and Doug, how I guess you and your husband began that process.
Yeah, we weren't even husband and wife then. We were strictly boyfriend and girlfriend. And we had met each other when I was 19. And, you know, like society did in those days, we really pursued very conventional paths. Those were the days when you definitely did not say, I'm starting a business. Guess what? I'm going to be a unicorn. It didn't happen. You really followed that traditional path. And I followed a traditional path. My husband did, my boyfriend at the time. And we were utterly miserable in what we were doing. We were working conventional jobs where you basically stay your whole life. And we were miserable. And I felt like I was a flower without sunlight and water. Like I couldn't breathe. And Doug was the one who said, We can't do this any longer. We have to do something that brings us joy. And we decided we would go away for a weekend and really not come back until we decided what we wanted to do with the rest of our lives.
Yeah. So I guess that was the beginning of the end of one side and beginning of that journey. So what was the actual action steps that you took to start creating toys?
We've been through every single step and more, but I think the first thing we did is pool our meager savings, you know, that we had made from cutting lawns and babysitting and everything we did into one account. And then we really, you know, we had honed in on the fact that we wanted to create products for children. We knew that those would have the power to unleash imagination and I think do the type of good we wanted to do. And then it was about creating our first product. And we had a brainstorm. You know, our first brainstorm was based on a book that both of us loved as a child, which was Pat the Cat and Pat the Bunny. Sure. And we had a brainstorm that perhaps we could create a puzzle with texture, because puzzles back in the 1980s were so dull, boring, and lackluster and needed reinvigoration so desperately. And I think we didn't have any of the skills ourselves. We went out and we found an artist. We had to go and find a factory and a prototype maker. And we just basically put one step in front of the other in getting a prototype made and then bringing it out and trying to get it manufactured.
I do know we talked before about that you were involved with the creative process. Have you done that through the years as your products have grown, as your company has grown?
I am the spark for all the products. And I think it's so much joy, but the fascinating thing is I'm really just the spark. Like I see the idea in my head and I see it finished, but then I don't have the other skills to bring it to life. I need a beautiful team around me who can design it, who can do the artwork, who can make it, engineer it. And I just follow it along that path from spark to finished product. And along the way, weigh in at every stopping point. So it's kind of fun. It's like giving birth to a child. You know, you see it, you have that vision, and then you follow it all the way through. But I need the team to bring it to life.
So you're going along this path and the company's growing. And at the end of the day, when you're done your work and you're lying down in bed, what was your feeling? Were you getting a sense of fulfillment or was there something else going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think toys were wonderful in that they enabled me for the first time ever to channel this profound darkness that I was born with into something light. And that was incredible because I think any of us who have so much darkness in us, we think it might submerge us and suffuse us and we'll never come back up. When we find the outlet for it into something like toys, no less, that can ignite a child's imagination and allow them to play, it's a profound sense of fulfillment. So I definitely did feel that fulfillment, no doubt. But I was born with something called existential depression, which is this deep lack of meaning in my life. And I would say, you know, I repressed it and denied it for a very long time. But, you know, when I couldn't do that, it would start to come up and I would start to feel this sort of sense of futility over why am I doing all this when we ultimately aren't going to be here? Like, what's the point of it all?
Right. I relate to that very much. You know, a few months ago, I read an article about your book, Lifelines, and the work that you're doing. And I said, we have to reach out to Melissa because she sounds exactly like me, because I was doing mechanically whatever I had to do and, you know, successful company and to the outside, it looked great. But there was questions going on, like, what's the whole point of what we're doing? So that's definitely profound. So where are you now as far as living your life with meaning and purpose and intention?
It's an amazing question. And I think my path took two routes. You know, when I finally admitted that I was exhausted. You know, I was in my late 40s. I had been racing outside myself. I call it the futile race my whole life to get validation through external means, right? Through gold stars and perfection and more material goods and more products and more children. I was like rabidly creating to thwart mortality. And I realized that it wasn't ever going to fill that gaping hole inside. And I had never accepted myself for who I truly was, which is a very kind of introverted, offbeat, weird, creative person. I had never accepted that because I never wanted to be that person. So I finally had to admit that I was imperfect. And I knew that if I was ever going to live authentically and heed the cry of my own soul to be seen as who I was,
right,
I needed to make that journey inward. And that was the first time I said, I need professional help. And I started working with a professional therapist who helped me take that journey inward. Then my meaning came entirely on my own through the philosophical path. And actually, it was the philosophers, the wise philosophers from thousands of years ago, starting with Socrates, who helped me find my meaning, because they had also undergone profound crises of meaning and had to construct philosophies so that they didn't succumb to taking their lives. Because they said that that was the coward's way out. And I knew in my heart, I was this close, but I knew that would be for me also the easy way out. And I wanted to find meaning. I wanted to find the light and I wanted to show others how they could find theirs.
I think that the most important thing is about emotion. We're taught, never, as a man, for example, you know, never cry. Today I cry all the time. My wife always makes fun of me about that. And I want consciously to feel all emotions. I know that you're doing a lot of intentional work now. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I would love to. And I think that is the centerpiece of everything we're doing. It's this idea that it's not about feeling better. It's not about feeling perfect. It's about feeling everything. So my goal, you know, and our goal on Lifelines is, you know, kids start with PE, with physical education from the time they're in kindergarten. Like we've learned that building up your body helps to prevent illness, helps to make you stronger, have more energy, and withstand life and life's blows, so to speak, better. But when it comes to emotional resilience, when it comes to mental strength and building up your mental and emotional capacity to handle anything that comes your way, like COVID, for example, we don't do anything. And that is why, you know, I believe that COVID has had such a profound impact on mental health, because nobody had the internal emotional resilience, regulation to handle that distress. We don't have any ability to handle distress and tolerate it. So once you admit that you are a full emotional spectrum and you will have highs and lows every single day, then you need a deliberate and intentional practice each and every day to help support you through life's ups and downs. And that practice, which I call metaphorically my backpack of lifelines, I like strap it on every day. That's my medicine. You know, I'm doing this holistically. Yes. And for me, it's the same thing as taking a pill. Others might take a pill. For me, if I don't engage this practice deliberately every single day, I start to go below the equanimous line and I may never come back.
Yeah, I'm definitely in that bucket. I'm definitely in that bucket. Every single day, it could be taking pen to paper. It could be exercise. It could be therapy. And everybody has to find their own path. But I think that, you know, through all the work of the podcast that I'm doing, and so much what you're doing resonates with my soul, that imagine more and more people, we can create a community of people recognizing that if they wanted to have that inner joy, it comes from having the courage. So hopefully people like you and I and more people stand front and center with the courage and give other people courage to know that this is their way in their own way. Everyone has their own story in their own way to stand front and center with exactly who they are, right? We're told in society that they're wrong, but they're actually right. All these people, the people that have the courage, are right. That's the message. And I think that's why what you're doing resonates so much within me. And it's really great.
And I also think, you know, we're given this impression that you're either perfect and everything's great, or you're broken and incapable of doing anything. And I think what I'm here to say is it's not black or white like that. Like, I have a mental affliction. I have existential depression that I was born with and I will end my life with. But it doesn't mean that I can't lead people, inspire people, create tons of incredible product, and live a bountiful life. However, I do need a practice, because it does not mean every day will be blissful. And I'm really an advocate of saying that. Like, I have bad days, I have bad hours, I have bad weeks, and I need my practice every single day. And I think the more of us that can admit that it's not, like, we grow up thinking it's all butterflies, rainbows, white picket fences, like all shiny. And when it's not, we feel like we're broken and something is wrong with us, because everyone else has the bright, you know, rainbows and sunshines. And the more of us that can say, it's everything, it's the full spectrum, it's rainbows and butterflies, but it's also dark, cloudy days.
So I would love to just hang out with as many broken people as possible, right? So it's like, okay, we've been broken so many times, and now let's begin our journey. Everybody that's kind of like trying on their own path. And I know we spoke, when we spoke speaking before, we talked about judgment. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about that, because that also resonates very much so.
Yeah, so part of my daily practice, so my practice is three sections. It's energy, equanimity, and engagement. And the equanimity practice is my most important and my most difficult practice. It's getting out of my head and into my heart. And my head, like everyone's head, our heads and our egos, although they sometimes do a couple things to protect us and warn us, for the most part, our egos tell us a bunch of lies. And they are very angry. And they my ego does two things every single day. One, when I feel any emotion that's not positive, it judges it. It says, Melissa, why are you feeling angry? Like, you don't deserve to be angry. It's always telling me I don't deserve it and I shouldn't. And what's wrong with me for feeling that way? So part of my practice is this idea of allowing my feelings, of saying to my head, head, I know you're telling me that, but you know what? I don't believe you. I'm allowed to feel my feelings. I'm human. And yes. I close my eyes and I breathe into the feeling and I let it, I call it be the sky. I try to be the sky and the feelings are just the clouds that are rolling on by. And I'm the sky that's kind of just a witness to the feelings. And then the second thing that my mind does is, you know, inevitably each day I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going to say something and I'm going to be like, oh, why did you say that? It's going to be taken the wrong way. I'm going to miss an appointment. I'm going to mess something up. Sure. And my head, again, really berates me. My head is very mean. It says, what is wrong with you, Melissa? You're such an idiot. Like, you shouldn't have done that. And then the other practice that is every single day is offering myself compassion for being human. Because yes. once we accept that humanity is imperfect, because again, my mind story said, you can only be perfect. Anything short of 100% is not worthy. It's worthless. Now I have to tell myself the opposite truth, that actually humans are beautifully imperfect.
Be a little bit gentle on yourself.
Exactly.
Just to be a little bit gentle. And
yes.
I mean, that is the key, because we're not robots. We're not robots. And I don't believe there's such a thing as failure. I believe it's, as Ray Dalio says, it's pain plus reflection equals progress, right? So it's the pain could be kind of failure and you're judging it. But if you're reflecting on it and you know that next time it's a change, you're gonna make movement. Yeah. You're gonna make movement.
And I speak a lot about failure because I am a product creator, and someone once calculated how many of my products are successful, and they calculated that it was 40%. So I found that so fascinating that I actually fail more than I succeed. I fail 60% of the time. And I realized that those failures were not failures like I had originally thought. They were actually points along the line between, you know, failure and success, because with every failure, I learned something that was incorporated into the next product, the next iteration, my philosophy. And that I started to welcome those failures, because without them, I never would have been able to have the successes. Yes. So actually, they're just part of the successes, just earlier downstream.
By the way, the most successful people I talked to, they said they would never change any of their story, which includes tremendous amounts of failures along the way. So that's also, right? So it's like, that's part of the recipe. And that's the message also. There will be failures. I want to just tell you, what was interesting is that every time I would go to Whole Foods, and so I have 9 kids. I know you have 6 kids, right? So I know that journey, right? Juggling everything. My wife and I, we work together. And, you know, it's like, okay, Melissa and Doug Toys, boom, let's put in the shopping cart. So made my kids super happy every time. So thank you for you, right? Thank you for you. Melissa, if people want to learn more about you, your book, and your company, how can people do that?
All they have to do is go to lifelines.com. And every week we have some really cool workshops and we talk about things that very few people talk about. And this week we talked about the full spectrum of emotion and what it means from a lifetime of not associating with dark feelings. How do you bring those feelings back into your life? And every week we talk about some really cool, pretty deep topics that most people don't talk about.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and it definitely will impact lots of people. So thank you.
Your authenticity is so beautiful, and I am so honored to be here speaking with you.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Common Denominator. Next week, my guest will be Antonio Neves, a TV and podcast host, a leadership speaker, and the author of the new book, Stop Living on Autopilot. He'll share the strategies you need to recommit to your life, find your drive, and experience lasting happiness. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator Podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.